Can everybody see that pretty good? But it's this image of the pilgrims coming up to the temple there in Jerusalem. See, you gentlemen over here, you see the all the people on their way. And I'm sure this is probably a lot more people than this were coming up. Thousands and thousands of people. Remember, there were 5,000 people. Well, actually 3,000. And then a few days later, 5,000 people were baptized there into the church in Acts chapter 2. And that was only a small segment of the people that were there gathered at Jerusalem for these festivals. So it was a tremendous occasion. But if you look here in Leviticus 23, and we'll see mention of the first fruits here. And we actually see it mentioned twice. I'm going to, first of all, call your attention to Leviticus 23:17. This is talking about what happened on the Feast of Pentecost. So you're counting 50 days in verse 16. It says, "You shall bring from your dwellings two wave loaves, 2 tenths of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are first fruits to the Lord." So there is this term, first fruits. That's Bikurim is the word for first fruits. And it's basically talking about the choice fruits at the beginning of your harvest. You were to bring those to God. And you were to do that here at the Feast of Pentecost. But if you look up in verse 10, it mentions another first fruits. It says in verse 10, "Speak to the children of Israel, say to them, when you come into the land which I give you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest." Actually, the word first fruits there is not the same word. It's not the word Bikurim. It's actually the word Reshit. It just means beginning, you know, like in the beginning, Bereshit. Reshit is the word beginning that you see at the beginning of the Bible in Genesis. So it just really is saying, bring a sheaf of the beginning of your harvest to the priests. But, of course, the beginning of your harvest is the first fruits, and there's another place in Leviticus 2 where this particular offering is also referred to as the same word, Bikurim, first fruits. And actually in Leviticus 2, the Pentecost offering is referred to as Reshit. So it's actually switched right back and forth. If you look in Leviticus 2 and Leviticus 23, you'll see that. So in essence, these become synonymous terms. The beginning or the first fruits of your harvest are basically talking about the same thing. But these are two different offerings. These were given at two different times. One was given during the days of unleavened bread. That was in verse 10. And then the other in verse 17 was given at Pentecost 50 days later. And there is a difference between those two. We'll see that in just a second. I'll have you turn next to, where are we going? To Exodus chapter 23. Turn over to Exodus chapter 23. And we'll see here in Exodus chapter 23, this is the very first mention of this festival in the Bible, is in Exodus 23. And it's in verse 16. And actually, starting in verse 14, it talks about three times a year you're going to keep a feast to me in the year. And verse 15 talks about the Feast of Unleavened Bread following the Passover. And verse 16 says, "And the Feast of Harvest, the first fruits of your labors which you have sown in the field." Notice that. The Feast of Harvest, that's what it's called here. So that's another name for this festival, the Feast of Harvest. And it's and again, it says, "The first fruits, the Bikurim, of your labors which you have sown in the field." And then it mentions the Feast of Ingathering, which is the Feast of Tabernacles later in the year. So the Feast of Harvest is another important name for this festival. And that's something we should remember. It's difficult maybe for us to remember that today because we don't do this. We're not out there bringing in the harvest, typically. I mean, some people do, but most of us in the church, we have jobs that don't require that. I know I don't. I'm sitting at my computer, and I'm not out there bringing in the harvest. Of course, we do labor in the field, so to speak, in the work that we do, whatever that might be. So figuratively, we participate. But in the literal sense that what we're talking about here, we are disconnected from that. So it's good to remember that and know where our food comes from. It comes from this important cycles that God has put in place and he provides for us through these means. But if we look down to verse 19, it actually says, Notice this, the first of the first fruits of your land, this is just a general command, the first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring into the house of the Lord your God. So that's interesting too. We have a feast of harvest where we bring in first fruits, but then we're just specifically told the first of your first fruits of your land we're going to bring to God's house, wherever that might be. It was the tabernacle, later it was the temple. And so that is something that that applied very generally. There was more than just this one particular harvest. Always, whatever the first fruits were of any crop needed to be brought before God. And we can see the same thing over in Exodus 34, but we'll see one more specification here in Exodus 34 that gives us another detail about this festival. Exodus 34. By the way, the wave sheaf offering during unleavened bread, That was basically the first fruits at that time, and the only first fruits at that time that there were available was barley. That was the time when the barley ripened. If you remember, the month was called Abib. It was the month of Abib, which means green ears, and that was the idea, is that the barley had just ripened, and they were able to go out and pick that barley. And so they were able to bring a sheaf of the barley before God. That was the first fruits of the barley harvest. This is different. Pentecost is in in chapter 34. It actually mentions here in verse 22 specifically. It says, "And you shall observe the Feast of Weeks." And that's what this, that's another name for this festival, by the way, is the Feast of Weeks, or Hag HaShavuot, or Hag HaShavuot. Or sometimes it's, the Jews usually just call it Shavuot. Which means weeks. That's again because you've counted 7 weeks from the previous festival to get to here. And that period of weeks is the period of the spring harvest. I'll read you something about that in just a second. But the Feast of Weeks, it says, you shall observe the Feast of Weeks of the first fruits, again, the Habikkurim, of wheat harvest. So this is very specifically of wheat harvest. That is different from the other first fruits at the time of the wave sheaf offering, which was the first fruits of the barley harvest. This is the first fruits of wheat harvest. And so that we see there's a different crop being harvested. And this different crop, again, you had to bring a first fruits of offering of it. Actually, of every crop, you had to bring first fruits. And we saw that kind of mentioned before. And you see it here again, if you look down to verse 26. It says, the first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring to the house of the Lord your God. So again, whatever the first fruits of whatever crop you might bring in, that needs to come to God. God demands that. That is his part. He wants the first. And why does he want the first? Because God doesn't come second. God comes first. In other words, whatever we have, we lay up to God first. If we were to use it for other things, and give God whatever's left at the end, often we might not have very much to give to God, or we might not have anything to really hand over to him. But here God wants the first fruits first. This is different from the tithe, by the way. There's a difference between tithing and first fruits. Tithing is an actual tenth, a percentage of whatever you bring in that you are required to give to God. But this is something specific. It's talking about in the harvest, whatever you bring in first, you are to bring before God. He also wants the firstborn. He mentions that several times in Scripture too. Whatever opens the matrix, whatever comes out first, that goes to God. Again, our focus needs to be on God first, above all, before anything else. Turn over, if you will, to Numbers 28. We'll see another name for this festival. Numbers 28, another name for this festival. And in Numbers 28, verse 26, it says, also on the day of the first fruits, Yom HaBikurim. So that is another name for the festival, the day of first fruits. When you bring a new grain offering to the Lord at your Feast of Weeks, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work. And of course, that's where we are today. The other The other name that we know this festival by, of course, is from the New Testament, and it's Pentecost. This was not exclusively a Christian term, though. The Jews of that day called it that because those who spoke Greek at the time, Pentecost day just meant 50, because they counted 50 from the previous festival, and they landed on this day, on the 50th day. That's what Pentecost means. There's one other name for the festival, too, that's not in the Bible that the Jews actually call it, which is the season of the giving of our law. That's another term that they use for this festival, the season of the giving of our law, because they associate it with the events of Mount Sinai and the giving of the law there at that time, which they believe was at that time. But I'm not going to go into that really today. Today I want to really stick with the issue of the first fruits and bringing them before God. If you'll turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 18, and actually, before you hold your place there in Deuteronomy 18 and flip back to Deuteronomy 8, I want to point something out here. In Deuteronomy 8, verse 8, it mentions, actually in verse 7, God talks about bringing them into this land, that has all these wonderful things. And in verse 8, it says specifically, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, which they typically relate that to date honey. I do believe they had bee honey as well, but again, they usually think of this in terms of the land producing crops. And so this is considered to be the date trees here. These are what are referred to as the seven species. These are the seven species of the land, of crops that were grown in the land of Israel. Wheat and barley, vines, fig trees, pomegranates, the olive oil from olive trees, obviously, and honey from date trees. So these were the staple crops, the seven crops of the land. And among the Jews, I mean, the idea was these were the things you had to bring first fruits of, is these all of these things. All of these things had to have first fruits presented. And although I do think there was more than that was presented, but and I'll get to that in just a second, which you can turn back to Deuteronomy 18. I'll read to you a little blurb out of a book here, kind of giving you the overview of the harvest. It says, on the second day of unleavened bread, the priest marked the start of harvest by cutting the first sheaves of barley. This is a book called The World Jesus Knew, by the way, and it kind of gives some details of the background. And it says, and waving them in the temple as the first fruits of the coming harvest. From this day, the people counted seven full weeks. During this time, they all were busy reaping the grain, first the barley, and then later the ripening wheat. The period was called the counting of the omer, or sheaf. Each day was officially noted in the temple, while special omer calendars and a liturgical formula now marked the days in the synagogue. So they were counting up to the Feast of Pentecost. They were counting the 50 days. And the 50th day was the day of Pentecost. And then you come down to what they would do then. They would bring these two wave loaves that were the first fruits of the wheat harvest. But then here's another note about this. People offered first fruits from other crops besides grain. That was what I was just mentioning. The Torah lists seven species of the land subject to the law of tithing and first fruits. Barley, wheat, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and honey, usually assumed to be date honey. None except the grain was ripe by Shavuot, by Pentecost. But nevertheless, God's portion was already allocated. Farmers noted the first signs of fruit on each species and tied a piece of straw around the stem. These would be brought to the temple later, either as money or dried. Meanwhile, there was the grain tithe to bring, not to be confused with first fruits, and any love gift to say thank you for God's special blessings. So that's how that worked with the harvest. So what we have here is basically the spring harvest is this period of 7 weeks between unleavened bread and Pentecost. It's kind of interesting because sometimes we may think of Pentecost as sort of the beginning of the spring harvest, but actually the offering of Pentecost was actually given at the end of the spring harvest. It was But it was obviously set aside at the beginning of when they were taking in the wheat harvest, which was probably, you know, midway between, I would guess, somewhere around then, between unleavened bread and Pentecost. So then, but they were still out there reaping. They had this work to do. And when they bring in the full harvest, they brought the first fruits before God as representative of the entire harvest. So it's an interesting interesting parallel, I think, with events in the church and all that we see symbolized there with God's people. Well, if you look here in Deuteronomy 18, it mentions a little bit more of giving first fruits. And it actually says in Deuteronomy 18, verse 4, the first fruits of your grain and your new wine and your oil. So that, again, we see those are things that were part of the crops brought in. And the first of the fleece of your sheep you shall give him. So again, you know, God demanded also the first fruits of other things too, besides just crops. And turn over, if you will, also to 2 Chronicles 31. 2 Chronicles 31. In 2 Chronicles 31, we read what was going on at the time of Hezekiah, when he was getting the nation back on track before God. And in verse 5, it says, as soon as the commandment was circulated, the children of Israel brought in abundance, the first fruits of grain and wine, oil and honey, and all of the produce of the field. And they brought in abundantly the tithe of everything. So whatever they were, again, all these, the produce of the land, they had to bring a first fruits of everything. Everything was required to have a first fruits offering. And then I will just refer to you another verse, Nehemiah 10:35. I'll just read this to you. It's very short, Nehemiah 10:35. And again, when Nehemiah was bringing the people back on track, it says, and we made ordinances to bring the first fruits of our ground and the first fruits of all fruit of all trees year by year to the house of the Lord. So all the trees, but again, you know, what all trees were they growing there? I mean, they probably were growing more than just pomegranate and olive trees and date trees. I don't know what all trees they had, but whatever trees there were, whatever crop you would have, I think even beyond the seven species, if they had them there, they would be required to bring those before God. So this is, again, God demands the first of all of our produce, and it's very important that we keep that focus. And is this over? Is this over these Old Testament, you know, regulations as far as bringing the first fruits of our crops? No. If you are today, if you are, you know, harvesting grain, if you're doing that, if you obviously we don't necessarily follow the exact calendar that they did, but again, we have a responsibility to bring the first. Now, we don't have a special offering in the temple, but I would assume this could still be done in the sense that you could at least put a valuation on whatever your first fruits are. It's probably not very much, actually. In one sense, you think the first fruits is going to be this grand thing, but actually the first fruits is a fairly small offering. As we'll see, God just said, put them in a basket. We're going to go to that in just a second. So it wasn't like the tithe. It wasn't like a full 10% of your crops or whatever. It was just a representation of whatever came first. So it's a very small offering. Is the first fruits, but still it's important to recognize God in that. And then in the future, these commands will be here again. I'm going to read to you two verses here, and I'll have you turn somewhere else, but I'm just going to read these two verses to you as well. These are from the book of Ezekiel, prophecies about the future. In Ezekiel 20 and verse 40, God says, "For on my holy mountain, on the mountain height of Israel, says the Lord God, there all the house of Israel, all of them in the land, shall serve me. There I will accept them, and there I will require your offerings and the first fruits of your sacrifices together with all your holy things." So again, God is going to require the first fruits. And specifically, I'll refer you to another verse in Ezekiel, chapter 44 and verse 30. This is from Ezekiel 44:30. It says, "The best of all first fruits of any kind, and every sacrifice of any kind from all your sacrifices shall be the priests that are functioning at that time. Also you shall give to the priest the first of your ground meal to cause a blessing to rest on your house." So in the kingdom, in the millennium, this will be reinstituted, and people will be again bringing their first fruits before God. So these are still a very important focus. Turn over to Jeremiah chapter 2, and I want to mention a little bit of the symbolism here. Jeremiah chapter 2, you know, we understand in symbolism that the first fruits represents God's church. It represents the called out of this age. It represents those who are the first of humanity to be presented before God as his people. But this is just continuing on in a tradition that existed actually in the Old Testament. We think of this as maybe a sort of a New Testament concept, but it's not a New Testament concept. You know, we also have the sense of the firstborn. The church, actually, the church is called the church of the firstborn. We are referred to in the New Testament as the church of the firstborn. But recall that Israel was also God's firstborn. You know, he told the Pharaoh, you know, Israel is my firstborn. You need to let my people go. And so Israel as a nation was considered to be God's firstborn. And Israel as a nation was also considered to be God's first fruits. Let's look here in Jeremiah 2. Jeremiah 2 and verse 3. It says specifically, Israel was holiness to the Lord, the first fruits of his increase. All that devour him will offend, disaster will come upon them, says the Lord. So Israel is the first fruits of God's increase, specifically stated right there. We have another statement in Hosea. You can turn over there as well. Hosea chapter 9. And we'll see this idea again. Hosea chapter 9 and verse 10. God says, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first fruits on the fig tree in its first season. But they went to Baal Peor. That's where they committed abomination and separated themselves to that shame. They became an abomination like the thing they loved. So God had called Israel out as his first fruits. That's what he was, again, intending by this nation. They are the first of the nations brought into covenant with God. But they went astray. So then, you know, God has called the church as his first fruits. But let's understand that the church is Israel. That's another thing that is sometimes hard to grasp. We are spiritual Israel, but we are there's a continuity there from the Old Testament. This is not a new nation in one sense, but it is a changed nation. It is a spiritually imbued nation. Which Israel, ancient Israel, was not. God has imbued us with his spirit to be able to succeed at being the first fruits he's called us to be. And I will just refer you to the book of Romans, and this is chapter 11. Romans chapter 11 is where Paul is kind of talking about Israel's place, and he says, you know, God hasn't cast away Israel. They're still his people, and the remnant is still here, and we, the church, are basically the remnant of Israel, and we're continuing on. And he says, you Gentiles, don't you boast about the branches being cut off so you could be grafted in. He's talking about Israel, the original Israel, the physical nation, as the trunk of the tree. And in that discussion, in Romans 11, verse 16, he says, for if the first fruit is holy, the lump is also holy, and if the root is holy, so are the branches. And what he's talking about there, so Paul actually referred to Israel there as first fruit again. Paul actually specified that Israel was God's first fruit. And the Gentiles then are being grafted in by being in the church into that first fruit to be part of the first fruits. And of course, scriptures we're familiar with, I'll just refer you to these about the church. You know, Romans 8:23 mentions that we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit. So again, that's clearly talking about those in God's church. And then also James 1:18, maybe a familiar scripture. It says, of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So again, this is talking about God's people, his church. We are the first fruits. Revelation 14 mentions the 144,000 as being first fruits to God and to the Lamb. So this is a concept that we find in both the Old and New Testaments. Christ is called the first fruits in 1 Corinthians 15, but that first fruits is clearly the wave sheaf offering. And I don't want to go into all of that now, but that's what that sense of the first fruits. He's the first fruits, meaning the first fruits of the as the wave sheaf offering. We represent the first fruits of Pentecost. And of course, the New Testament church actually started on that day, the day of Pentecost. So great parallels here and a lot to think about. But I'd like you to turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 26 now. And this is what I want to bring this to close with, but also give a big focus on here for a few minutes. So, here in Deuteronomy 26, it tells what would happen when the first fruits offerings are brought. It actually says, "And it shall be, when you come into the land," this is verse 1 of Deuteronomy 26, "when you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, and you possess it and dwell in it, that you shall take some of the first of all the produce of the ground which you shall bring from your land that the Lord your God is giving you, and put it in a basket." So again, as I said, this is not a gigantic offering. It's not a tithe. It's just of whatever the crops are, enough to, you know, to put in a basket and bring there before God. "And go to the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. And you shall go to the one who is priest in those days and say to him." I want you to notice this. There was something that the people were supposed to say. They had something to say when they brought these offerings. They were given actually a command of what they were to say. God says, "You are to say to him, I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come to the country which the Lord swore to our fathers to give us." So that was something they were to be focused on. I have arrived at what God promised, basically. That's the focus. And then, verse 4, "Then the priest shall take the basket out of your hand and set it down before the altar of the Lord your God. And you shall answer and say before the Lord your God." Now here is more. They had to actually learn this. They had to rehearse this because they had to say this when they brought their offering, when they brought the first fruits. "And you shall answer and say before the Lord your God, my father was a Syrian about to perish, and he went down to Egypt and dwelt there." It's talking about Jacob coming out and coming down there into Egypt. "Few in number, and there he became a nation, great, mighty, and populous. But the Egyptians mistreated us, afflicted us, and laid hard bondage on us. Then we cried out to the Lord God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and looked in our affliction and our labor and our oppression. So the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm, with great terror, with signs and wonders. He has brought us to this place and has given us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now behold, I have brought the first fruits of the land which you, O Lord, have given me. Then you shall set it before the Lord your God and worship before the Lord your God. So you shall rejoice in every good thing which the Lord your God has given to you and your house, you and the Levite and the stranger who is among you." So this was a special ceremony they had to do. If you can imagine, brethren, thousands of pilgrims coming with their first fruits, and they would bring them there to the altar. And I've got a picture here that I think is a neat picture. It kind of shows that. It shows the people bringing this this offering. Here's where they would bring their first fruits and they would hand it to the priest. The priest would sit it down on the corner of the altar, as was actually mentioned there in the Bible. And then it says they would, after he'd set it down, they would say their little speech about how my father was a Syrian and, you know, and we went down to Egypt and we were, you know, all these things happened. And then it says after that, then they were supposed to worship. So there was actually a spot where they would then kneel there right before the doors of the temple and worship in exact conformance with the command that we just read there. So they would actually do that. But you had thousands of people doing this, thousands of people. And so, you know, the priests knew this spiel pretty well. They heard it over and over and over again. And I thought this was an interesting observation. This is a Jewish book here, by the way, but it's talking about what happened there. And I think it's interesting because it says, why did they have to do this? Why did they have to say all this? Because God certainly knew all this background, did he not? In fact, this says, the omniscient creator suffers no lack of knowledge. Indeed, he knows all that has transpired in his world since the beginning of time and the thoughts of all men. He certainly knows this story as well. Yet man stands before his creator in the holy temple and before the priest, the emissary of the one who causes his presence to dwell in this place, and he recounts the entire chain of events again, beginning with Jacob's trouble with Laban in Mesopotamia. He continues and relates the story of Israel's descent into Egypt and concludes with their return home on an outstretched arm, the veritable fulfillment of the verse. And he brought us to this place, a reference to the building of the temple, is what they understood that to mean. So, you know, why did they have to do this? Why did they have to go through all that? Well, think about this. I mean, again, God knows the story. But he wanted them to know the story. And he wanted them to focus on that. He wanted to memorize this story. And he wanted to be able to recite it back at the temple and know what this was all about. There's another note on this that I have here. It says, find what I just did with that note. Here it says, we see, this is and I think this is a very good little write-up here. It says, we see that in reality, the biblical section of my father was a homeless Aramean or Syrian is a poetic form of admission uttered before God by the pilgrims who bring up their first fruits to the temple, a declaration of thanks for all the bounty and good which the Creator has bestowed upon his nation Israel. Now, one might think, of course, we must be thankful to God, but is not the listing of these benefits perhaps just a bit of an exaggeration? After all, to quote the rabbis, when an individual brings up his first fruits, all he offers is, quote, one date seed or a single cluster of grapes. So why should the ceremony marking this modest offering be accompanied by such lengthy prayer of thanks? In truth, the grateful man recites a whole list of undeserved kindnesses which God has dealt him long before he arrived at this point. The odd pilgrim, bringing all the goodness which the Holy One had bestowed upon Israel from the very beginning, the delivery from Egypt, the sustenance in the desert, the giving of the Torah, arrival in Israel, up to the building of the temple, this meager basket of fruit is a minimal offering of thanks, a symbolic gesture by which the bearer attempts to express his deep feelings of thanks for God's many kindnesses, both with him as an individual and with the entire community as a whole. So I thought that was a very good write-up. I've got 3 points here, and I'm just going to give them to you as 3 points. I don't have any scriptures to go with them, but I just want these points to sink in to kind of to leave off of what I think this was all about, and I think it kind of makes sense if you'll see what God is asking here. I take it this is the reason. To show this, to help remind them of this, and this is a lesson for us. We can remember these things too. Number one, we are part of a bigger story. You know, that's what they had to know. They had to know that they were part of a bigger story. It wasn't just them. They brought those first fruits, but that wasn't where it started. It was because of all the blessings that God had given to the people all along before that allowed them to even come there with this basket of fruit. They would not have been able to do that had all these things not transpired before that. And we have so much to be thankful for, not just what we bring in right now, but all that's happened already. We are part of a bigger story. And it's a grand story of God's plan that he's working out for all mankind, that he planned before time began. Number two, the bigger story, even the past, is still our story. The bigger story, even the past, is still our story. You know, that was true for them. They came there and they had to recite all these things that had happened. But it wasn't just about stuff that had happened, because that stuff that had happened was also about them. It was why they were there. They were part of that story. And we are too, brethren. We're part of that same story too. The one we just read, the thing that they had to say, that's also our story. If it wasn't for all that, we wouldn't be sitting here right now. So this is our story, and we are part of it. It belongs to us. And number three, ours is a shared story with a shared destiny. Ours is a shared story with a shared destiny. It's not just me and God. It's not just one person. We are part of a community. We are part of a family. We are part of the nation of Israel. We are God's people, and together we are going to inherit an awesome destiny. So we can rejoice together. That's what this day is about, for us to come together, to gather together as a people to rejoice. Well, to conclude then, brethren, the words that accompany the offering of the first fruits show us these wonderful truths, that we're part of a bigger story. The bigger story, even the past, is still our story, and that ours is a shared story with a shared destiny. As we thank God for the blessings He gives us in our lives, let us be mindful that it's all part of something much bigger. And let us truly rejoice in that together, as a people, as the very first fruits. We are the first fruits of God's harvest of all mankind. There is a lot, not just what's happened this year, there's a lot going back far and going forward far into the future to be thankful for.